You're listening to the Save the Marriage Podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
Hi, this is Lee Baucom, and you are on the Save the Marriage Podcast. This is the podcast designed to help you both save and improve your marriage, but not only about your marriage, but about how you are in the relationship. I'm not here just to stop a divorce. I'm here to help you improve your relationship, improve your own selfhood, bring your higher self into the relationship. The way we do that is we look at three different layers to the relationship. I call them the three C's of saving your relationship. And the first one is connecting with your spouse. The second one is changing yourself, growing into a higher place. And the third one is creating a new path for your relationship. All three of those are necessary parts of the process in order to restabilize your relationship and to have you bring yourself into that. Now, we focus on the relationship, but I want you to notice that we're also focusing about how you are in the relationship, how you present yourself, not just in the relationship, but in the world. Are you being true to yourself? Are you being true to your true nature, to your deepest self, to that middle part of yourself? When I say self, I mean capital S, that self that's about meaning and purpose, that is driven by a place of thriving in your life and how you bring that into your relationship. We're also about strategies of saving your relationship, but I want to be cautious about that term, and I'll tell you why right now. Just yesterday, I sent out an email to some people on my email list, and I just said, hey, what's your burning question about what to do about saving your marriage? Now, that went out to quite a few people, but I was blown away by the number of people who responded. And the reason I asked the question is for this podcast and for articles for the blog and for other material. I was really trying to get a pulse for where things are for the listener. And that, you know, sometimes we kind of guess where you are, and I try to kind of have a sense of where people are and what the needs are, but the best way I can find your deepest need is to simply ask. And so I asked the question and got a ton of responses. And what I noticed is that some are thematic. You know, what do I do about dealing with an affair, an emotional affair? What do I do about dealing with a distant spouse? And then there are some that were problematic. They were telling me about specific instances in their life. But then there are others that were strategic. They wanted to know exactly what to do at this point. And here's my caution. Sometimes we get really tied into strategy and we forget authenticity. We forget that, you know, there's something that we bring into that, to every relationship. Who I am in my marriage is different than who you'll be in your marriage. And we all vary on that. And so one of the things I always say is you've got to be true to yourself. So let me kind of use an analogy here. I think the danger is people looking for the trick. You know, some people will say, well, you know, I've been working on building the connection and I've been doing this and this and it's been working. And they almost use the techniques I talk about in connecting as almost manipulation. And not quite, but almost. They're looking for kind of what's the next trick to pull out of the pocket. And the reason that people do that is for really good reasons. You know, it's for really innocent, not like I want to manipulate this other person, but I want to save this relationship. I mean, I hear the desperation in the questions that people really want to know, what do you do now? So I want to kind of reformulate this a bit because there is a danger when we get stuck on strategy. When we're looking for that trick, that extra little technique, that some way of kind of cheating the system. And I don't mean that in a bad way. My analogy is about, you know, I watch this when people are trying to lose weight. And what are we always trying to do when we lose weight? Well, one of the things that we all want to do is we all want to keep eating the same kind of food we love to eat and lose weight doing it. And so we're always trying to find these tricks on how you're going to do that. How, you know, or we want the easy answer. You know, how can I lose a pound a day for the next, whatever, 3 weeks? And how can I, you know, get my abs back instantly? And how can I redefine my body? And unfortunately, what often happens is that we then fall for the next trick. you know, the next little fad comes out where you're supposed to eat 15 grapefruit in a day, or as I saw recently, whatever it is, 30 bananas in a day, or how you're supposed to juice every day and detox. And then we get into these really the tricks, right? And unfortunately, most of the time, those tricks are very short-lived. You know, if I tell you to only eat grapefruit, you're going to lose weight, not because it has anything to do with the grapefruit, but because you're not getting enough calories in short term. Remember, though, that just like with weight loss, there is a feedback loop that when your body doesn't get enough calories, it goes into hibernation and makes it even harder to lose weight. And so what most people don't want to know is that losing weight really is about upping their level of activity and reducing their number of calories and probably even switching calories. And that really is as simple as it gets. We can make it very trick-oriented by looking at the latest fad. But, you know, when you look down at what really works for people, that's what it is. And it's the same with saving a relationship. It really boils down to the three things that I talked about in the beginning. Are you connecting with your spouse? Are you changing yourself? And are you creating a new path? There is another piece in that equation, and that's what the other person does, just like what your body does is different than what somebody else's body does in a diet. You know, there's some analogies here of what happens, because we have the fact that lots of stuff is coming at us that we have no control over. How our spouse chooses to act out, or how our spouse chooses to respond to our changes, how our spouse chooses to be in the world, we have no control over that. We can't stop that. And so when we get caught up in trying to figure out, you know, the simple solution, sometimes we forget that there's a complexity to it, the other person. That what we really have control over is our actions and our attitude, nothing else. We have no capacity for anything else. So let's talk about what I consider the two primary goals in this. Number one is to save your marriage. That's obvious. I mean, that, you know, people think that I am all about marriage at no cost. That is not the case. What I am about is providing information for people who want to work on saving their marriage, but not at the cost of, two, saving yourself. Sometimes we do all these efforts to get somewhere only to find that what we've given up is our integrity, is our self-understanding. Somebody wrote me earlier about how their spouse wanted to kind of spice up their relationship by doing some things that really were not within the ethical standards of this person. And they did it trying to save their marriage, and in the end, what they realized is they had traded out their selfhood for a relationship that really was not even the relationship they wanted. What they had saved was not what they really wanted to save. And so that's a danger for all of us, to watch those two goals at the same time. We have to, if we want to work on saving the relationship, but we have to attend to saving the self, making sure that we're being true to our self, that we're being true to who we really are. And sometimes when we get lost in those tricks, that doesn't happen. When we get lost in the tricks, sometimes we're seduced into trying some things that maybe we don't feel quite right about. So let's talk about this. Years ago, there was a piece of psychology I really loved reading about. It's called Games People Play. And when I say games people play, it's not like, you know, the people out back playing badminton or Jenga or whatever it is that is the game of the day. These are the psychological games that people play, both with themselves and other people. And when we play these games, they usually lure us away from our truer self, from our deeper self, to a place that's maybe not so good for us to be. So let me talk to you about what I see as some of the games people play, and a lot of them are mental games. Some of them get acted out, but a lot of them are mental. For instance, the first one is It's Not Fair. That's a game that people play of It's Not Fair. Many years I've had people in my office saying It's Not Fair, and they'll tell me why life, it is life. It's not fair. My spouse isn't loving. I have this illness. I have this disease. I have this trauma from childhood. There's an endless list of why life isn't fair. And all I can say is, if somebody is listening to this, has the capacity of listening to this somehow, you're right, life isn't fair. You're on the winning side of life. You know, when I realized this in my own life was when I was confronted with what exactly could happen to people. I remember when I was working in a hospital and working with people who were always, there's always one worse. You know, when I just thought I'd seen the worst that could happen to somebody, something else had happened. And so I realized physically life wasn't fair. I was the winning side of it. Maybe I didn't have, you know, the muscular body that I had wanted, or maybe I wasn't a sports star that I would have wanted to be, but I had more health than a lot of other people. So in the life isn't fair, I was on the winning side. And then I got to travel some to some third world countries and realized that the life isn't fair. If I had a pair of shoes, I was on the winning side of life. You know, on the equation of the balance of where life isn't fair, I was on the life was more fair to me than others. And so sometimes we play that life isn't fair and we don't notice how unbiased we've become, how biased we've become, the unbiased perspective of saying, wow, look at all my good fortune. Look at all of my fortunes of life rather than where I feel like life isn't fair. Now, I don't want to take away the pain of any event, but the life isn't fair is when we take a pain of life and make it as if we are being picked on directly, as if life somehow is turning it on against us. And that's the danger. Not that we can feel pain, not that we can feel grief and frustration, but when we start playing that game in our head, we take ourselves to a different point. We put ourselves on the defensive, first of all, and we put ourselves on a scarcity model, second of all. And a scarcity model means life isn't fair, I'm not getting what I deserve. You know, that's the built-in part of that. I'm not getting what I deserve out of this. And yet, when we step back, we often see that we're not getting what we deserve. We're getting much more than that in so many areas. And sometimes we get so narrowly focused that we lose sight of the rest. I had a client a few years back that had been through a divorce, I think now about 40 years ago. And after the divorce, she got in such a pity party that life wasn't fair that she missed the fact that her kids were growing up and they were very good kids. And she missed the fact that she had friends around her who loved her. And she missed the fact that she had lots of opportunities in life. And so because of the divorce, she squandered the rest of her life playing the life isn't fair game. Was the divorce unfair? Yes. Was she taken advantage of in the divorce? Absolutely. But life is different than that. To say that circumstance is painful and that circumstance is unfair is okay. But when we start playing the game, when we run through that script of life, that life isn't fair, we get ourselves trapped in a very bad place that we can't see what we truly have, what fortune we have. Okay, so the first game people play is it's not fair, and that's just a game we play in our heads. The second one is, I'll be who they want me to be. Now, this is I'll be who my spouse wants me to be, right? That this is one of those tactics. This is a game people play tactic of how do I become this other person? And so I watch people transform themselves, doing backflips, trying to become this fantasy of what they think the other person wants. In reality, they rarely hit it right. Often this comes on the heels of an affair. And yet, if they knew that person that the affair was had with, it would have nothing to do with any true fantasy. Sometimes we do it just because we're so desperate to hold on to them. We're willing to become anyone we want to be. And in that moment, we start trading ourself, our true self, for a false self to try to put that out there. And the problem with that is over time, you will either become who you don't want to be, because you would have already been that person if that was who you wanted to be. Or you will finally go, I'm playing a charade and my spouse is having a relationship with a fake person. Either strategy is going to fail. How about this little game? I'll make them jealous. I've watched people have affairs. I've watched people have lots of illicit relationships and do lots of crazy things trying to make a spouse jealous. And in the process, all they did was trade out their own sense of ethics and morality with trying to get the attention of someone through a bad emotion. And so when we play that one, we get ourselves usually further and further away from our true self into a place where we look in the mirror and go, who have I become? That's a game people play that gets them trapped. How about this? I'm going to wait for the perfect condition. When just the right time comes, then I'm going to start working on my marriage. I heard that over and over yesterday in the emails, people saying, you know, I'm just waiting for my spouse to be a little more open to this. I'm just waiting for the basically perfect conditions. Perfect conditions don't come until we start working to make the perfect conditions. This game is a justification for fear. We're fearful of acting in a certain way. We're fearful of stepping up. We're fearful of taking a risk. And so we're waiting for the perfect conditions. And yet when those perfect conditions come, we'll pretend as if we need some other conditions. And the problem with this is it keeps us paralyzed, but we pretend that we're not really paralyzed. We're ready to go. We're just waiting. In reality, it's just paralysis by fear. Or how about this? Maybe if I use reverse psychology, it'll work. So they say, hey, you know what? I want a divorce. And you go, okay, you know, I understand. Let's do that. But you don't believe it in your heart. The problem is reverse psychology only works with five-year-olds and younger. It doesn't work with adults, at least for not very long. There are lots of programs out there, lots of advice you'll see that's all about reverse psychology. And it might stop the initial fight because the other person doesn't know what to do, mainly because you're suddenly agreeing with them. But in the end, they continue down the path. They continue down this process they think you're now on board with. And you're going, wait, I thought this was supposed to trick them into coming back to me. You end up being dishonest with yourself, and you end up being dishonest with the other person. And when you become dishonest in the relationship and with yourself, you become dishonest. You're no longer true to yourself. You've given away a part of yourself, so much so that it becomes very hard to find your path back. So if you have this desire to use reverse psychology, make sure you're using it with your child, not with a spouse and not with friends, only with the child and only here or there. Okay, how about this one? I'll hurt you so you know what it's like. This is the belief that if we lash out at somebody, they'll feel the pain and it'll wake them up. Rarely does it wake them up, but it does give them pretty clear evidence that it's time to get rid of this relationship. And yet, I watch people do it all the time, whether it is having an affair with somebody, or whether it is kicking them out of the house, or whether it's doing something just trying to create pain. When that happens, the other person gets the justification they needed to go ahead and get out. Wow, you must not care about me after all, because that really hurt, and out they go. So when we try to do that, let me make you feel how I feel, it rarely works, and usually we live with regret from that. Because what we've become is, instead of being the person who can kind of claim the higher ground and say, you know, I'm working on this relationship and I'm working to be faithful to my vows, what they begin to claim is the lower position. They lash out. And sometimes what they've assumed is the other person was doing it to hurt them. You know, I've had several people in my office who said, you know, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to have a revenge affair. That was their term, a revenge affair. I'm going to teach them a lesson. Here's the problem. The other person may not have been vindictive in having an affair. Now, I'm not saying that their affair was okay or justified or anything else. I'm just saying that the motivation behind it goes from responding to a feeling of disconnection and not being able to monitor one's boundaries to a feeling of anger. And what it does is it then creates other victims. Not only is the marriage a victim, but the person you had the affair with becomes, you know, somebody who really was helping you be mean. And at that point, you have all lost in the equation. So sometimes when somebody is setting out to hurt someone, the methods they use become much more destructive. I've often seen it used with kids. You know, I'll hurt you. I'll keep the kids from you. And what ends up happening is then the kids don't have access to a parent. There are lots of ways that gets played out. I just want you to hear the fact that when we set out to hurt someone, we have made ourselves into the bad guys in ways that may not have been true before. A spouse hurting you may have been accidental. It may not have been intentional, but and yet that doesn't mean it didn't hurt you. I'm just saying it may not have been intentional, and yet your response is to be intentional. That's a dangerous game we play. What I want to play also put into this games people play category is any manipulation you might use, any way you might be trying to manipulate the other person in overt ways. I'm not talking about the fact that we at all on some level when we're communicating are working to do some manipulation to get people on board with us. I'm talking about clear points when you say, how can I manipulate this? How can I get the other person fooled into doing something different in the relationship? And when we do that, we're playing games. And those games always get us in trouble. They always backfire. I've never seen it played out in any way long term that makes sense. Short term, sometimes you get something that you want. Short term, sometimes you go, oh, see, it made the other person hurt, and then they apologize. Or maybe it led them to slow down a process for a little bit of time. Or maybe they got jealous for a little bit of time. But in the end, all of those games end up backfiring. All of those frameworks we create in our heads, all we're doing is creating new structures of thought that keep us stuck and usually draw us away from being our truer self. So remember what I said early on, you have control over two things, your actions and your attitude. Now, when I say attitude, I'm really not talking about always being cheery. That's not what I mean at all. It's about choosing to not be bitter, for one thing. It's about choosing to not play games. And it's about choosing to continue to work on what you find to be important. At some point, and this was another question that people brought up a while back, at some point people often say, you know, when do I quit? When do I say it's time to quit? And unfortunately, that's an individual answer. When it is time for you to quit is going to be different than somebody else. Some people say, I've had enough. I am not going to keep pushing for this. After a month or less. Some people will work on this. I heard someone say, I've been working on this now for 8 years. How long before I know it's been too long? And my response is, when you say, I can't do it anymore, I don't want to do it anymore, those are indications when you've come to the end of it. What I'm trying to do is create strategies and approaches and mindsets that can help you work on saving your marriage as long as you want to do it. At the point when you say, I can't do it any longer, or I'm giving up too much of myself, then you've already answered that question. Clinically speaking, when people ask that question, clinically speaking, how long's too long? There is no answer. So in the meantime, up until that point, the attitude of perseverance that I'm going to keep working on this and persistence that I'm going to keep on pushing, those are the attitudes I'm talking about. I'm not talking about an attitude like, you know, always have a good attitude, always be upbeat, always be cheerful. Now, those are some ways of making sure you're not triggering more resentment and validating your spouse's feelings about needing to get out. You don't want to do that. You know, sometimes we look at who we've become in a marriage and go, wow, you know, I've become a bitter person. I've become an angry person. I've become a demanding person, a controlling person. I've got to move back to my true self. Our true selves are not bitter, demanding, angry, or controlling. That's not our true self. That's maybe a self that we've adopted in order to defend ourselves against the world, or adopted in order to push the other person in some direction, but those aren't our true self. So what I'm talking about is working from a place, an attitude of persistence, of perseverance, of pushing forward when you have those times when you go, you know, I'm upset, so I'm just going to be upset. You say, you know, that's not the attitude I want to take. I want to be intentional about how I move through this. Also, an attitude that is natural to us is looking for a place of meaning and purpose, that a relationship like this may be meaningful enough and purposeful enough to save. And that gives us that place we want to work from. That's the attitude I'm talking about. I'm not talking about having to be Pollyannish about the world. You can look at the world realistically and decide you're still going to keep working at this. You're still going to put forth the effort. That's the attitude we're talking about. And actions, we have control over that. Am I going to lash out at my spouse? Am I going to make my spouse feel bad? Am I going to rub my spouse's nose in it? Am I going to make those actions, or am I going to work on connecting actions? And am I going to work on growing myself into a higher person? And am I going to begin to find a new way of defining what our relationship can look like? Those are all actions we can choose to take. So let me propose some actions and attitudes that stick together. At the end of the day, you have to live first and foremost with yourself. You have to be able to look in the mirror and say, you know what? I feel good about who I am. And so in order to do that, I think there's some things that we want to be watching out for. Five different areas to watch for. First is to stay clear on your intentions. What are your reasons why you're saving your marriage? I've talked about this for several weeks, of writing down your list and marking out any that are not about meaning, they're not about purpose, they're not about commitment, they're not about, you know, a higher kind of self. If it's about preserving estates or anything like that, that's not it. If it's about, you know, wanting to have a good relationship for the kids, that's one that I put in that category. But anything else, you know, I don't want to have to divide up the business or things like that. You know, I don't want to be left. I don't want to have to sell the house. Those are the ones you just mark off the list and go with those deeper purposes. The reasons why, as long as you're looking at those reasons why and they give you a sense of a purpose, you know, that they ring true to your inner self, that'll keep you clear on your intentions for this. Then stay clear on your actions. Whenever you hear someone say, here's what you ought to do, check it out with yourself and say, is this something that I really feel okay with? You know, if you read online how you're supposed to do act in some certain way, and there's a piece of it that doesn't feel good, whether it's my work or anyone else's work, you need to attend to that and ask, why doesn't it feel good? Does it not feel good because, you know, it's scary to do that? Or does it not feel good because it really kind of hits on your ethical parts? That there's something about that that just doesn't sit right with you. That's what I'm talking about when you look at being clear on your actions. Are they truly you? Do they represent your truest self? In your gut, after you do a gut check, do you feel good about what you're thinking about doing? So stay clear on your actions. Stay clear on your attitude. Keep a perspective. One of the things I see really happens for a lot of people is they get caught up in the short term. What happened in the last few days, or what happened in the last week, or in the last month, or they look forward and they think about just the next few days, and they don't get a long-term perspective. They don't give a perspective of sticking through this, not because it's going to be hard for a bit, but long-term where are we headed. And that often helps us stay clear on our attitude. It gives us a better perspective on life and where you are in life. You know that when I went to those third world countries, it gave me a new perspective on where I am in life and how fortunate I am. And finding some ways of resetting that for you, it keeps us a little more multidimensional. Sometimes our attitude is often about the fact that we've gotten unidimensional. We're only about saving this relationship and we're missing a bigger picture. And so attitude can also be about that, keeping perspective of where you are in the world. Stay clear on your boundaries. Remember, our boundaries is what you won't let someone else do to you. So you want to make sure that as you're working to save your marriage, you're staying clear on that. It's not okay to let somebody violate your boundaries for the sole reason that you don't want to stir up a fight and you don't want to cause more trouble in your relationship. Boundaries are what help save a marriage. That's why I put a whole chapter in there in the Save the Marriage system or the blueprint, because it's so important for people to be clear about their boundaries. So stay clear on the boundaries, what you will not let someone else do to you. And finally, stay clear on your standards, what you expect of yourself. How do you live to that higher self? What are the places where you say, you know what, this is a non-negotiable for me. This is what I expect of myself. This is how I expect myself to act. Stay clear on your standards. So just quickly to go through, stay clear on your intentions, your actions, your attitude, your boundaries, and your standards. And what you find is that pulls you forward in your efforts to save a marriage without playing a game, by being authentic to your truest self. Don't look for the quick trick. Stay for the long term by being truest to yourself. That's when a marriage is saved and leaves you with a marriage that's worth saving, along with your selfhood that's worth celebrating. And that's what I want you to be able to do at the end of the day, to say, I did my best, and here's where we are. Okay, I'm hoping that that was helpful for you. I'd love to know about that, how that fits in for you. I'd love for you to leave a comment. If you're on the blog, you can leave that in the comment area below. If you're listening to this on Stitcher or iTunes or any other podcast aggregator, you can simply go to SaveTheMarriageBlog.com. That's SaveTheMarriageBlog.com. Now, if you're wondering about that framework I talked about of those three C's, of how you connect with your spouse, change yourself, and create a new path, that's the material in my new book, which is How to Save Your Marriage in Three Simple Steps. And those are the three simple steps. You can find it at Amazon. The easiest way to get there is go to SaveTheMarriage.com/Kindle, or you can go to Amazon.com and just search for How to Save Your Marriage in Three Simple Steps. Also, let me know if there's something you'd like to hear about. If you didn't get that email and you go, you know what, I've got this burning question, you can drop it to me in an email, just podcast@SaveTheMarriage.com. That's podcast@SaveTheMarriage.com. Till next week, I wish you the best as you continue to work to save your marriage.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage Podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.